You are listening to Secret Handshake, the podcast covering the movies that help you identify your friends and maybe make a few more along the way. Coming up, Spy Number 82, 1988's Night of the Demons, and a collection of spooky season staples featuring demons, boobs, demon boobs, Ouija boards, razor blades, haunted houses, possessed hot chicks, headless horsemen, monster squads, heavy metal maniacs, horror hosts, cadaver dolls, and horror skank extraordinaire, Linnea Quigley. Martin.
Yes.
Eat a bowl of fuck. Edition of Secret Handshake. I'm your host, Jacob Knight, and joining me as always is Martin Carlson. Martin, we lied again.
Yep.
We said that we were going to do Let's Scare Jessica to Death, but instead we pivoted because we went to our yearly trip back east to the 24-hour horror-thon thrown by Exhumed Films, and we saw Witchboard, directed by Kevin S. Tenney. That was the movie 13 of 15?
It was late. It was after my nap.
It definitely was. It was late. It was movie 13 because it was that, and then it was Bram Stoker's Dracula, and then it was James Gunn's Slither.
Yeah.
So, but we watched Witchboard together, and we kind of stumbled out into the sunlight after, you know, 15 straight horror movies on 35mm. Again, thank you, Exhumed Films. Best,
we love you.
Event of the year, every year. And we started talking about Night of the Demons. And we were like, and how Night of the Demons is, particularly for you, one of the ultimate Halloween films. And then we started talking about, you know, being on the East Coast with the leaves changing, full on fall weather, 24-hour horror-thon. Like, we were like, what are, like, the vibes of, like, Halloween were, like, there. So we started talking about, like, what were the ultimate Halloween vibe movies for us, and that's how we kind of pivoted to this episode to do Night of the Demons, because this movie's pretty special to you in that regard.
Yeah, it's honestly one of my favorite 80s horror films. The first time I saw it was in college, and I remember seeing the cover, because the cover was terrifying as a kid.
Oh, like, yeah.
It's Angela on the cover, and I think it we'll get to that a little bit later, but has one of the coolest demon designs. I generally think they're terrifying looking still. I think the weird fangs they have with a lot of gums is really creepy. Just like Angel's terrifying. I remember seeing it for years.
It's pretty close to Lamberto Bava's demons, honestly.
Very fangy.
His are much more grotesque, but the fang design looks pretty similar.
That's a good comparison, because I think they're generally creepy looking, even watching it for like the 30th time. But I remember seeing it. It was one of the dorm I was living, and my good friend Derek and his roommate Evan were like, "You've never seen Night of the Demons?" They popped it in on VHS. We watched that and Assault on Priest 13 back to back, which I'd also never seen.
Pretty
so
good
quite,
night.
Quite a double feature.
Also pretty compact. You're in and out of both of those movies in 3 hours combined.
Oh yeah, and they're both they have great pacing. But I think, yeah, this one hit me because, and I've watched it a lot because for a while it was hard to get. There was no Blu-ray until Scream Factory put it out. But I would watch. There was a really great YouTube rip, and I would just watch on YouTube like a couple times a year.
Yeah.
And for me, it just really starts with the opening credits, that amazing, his brother Dennis, really amazing with his brother's score, that synthy fun thing with the animated intro of just ghosts and goblins. And it really is full on, like, we're just going to get you in the Halloween mood. To your point, it's leaves, it's graveyards. It really is almost Scooby-Doo-ish in its setup of, like, let's go to the old haunted house. You know, it's thin on that plot, but it just, like, does the thing.
Well, and the other thing that I love about the movie, too, is that it almost has, like, a Creepshow-style,
yep,
like, wraparound with the old man. It starts with, like, the triple scare, where it's an old man kind of shuffling home, and he encounters trick-or-treaters, and then he gets scared again, and he's scared by one of our protagonists, the good girl.
Yeah.
You know, in the group. And he freaks out and yells at her, calls her a whore and everything, and then kind of shuffles home. And then he disappears from the rest of the movie until the very end, because we see, as he spills his groceries, he also has the double-bladed or double-sided straight razors in there.
And he literally holds up that and an apple to the camera is like, they're going to get it this time. Like, yeah. He's setting up that, like, the very Halloween myth of...
Yeah, don't take candy from strangers, because right. people have put, like, razor blades inside of candy and everything, that urban legend.
Yeah.
And then you don't see him for the rest of the movie, but then he comes back at the very end, where his wife, who obviously fucking hates this dude, you know, feeds him a razor blade, and it comes out of his throat in a pretty nasty gore effect.
She bakes him an apple pie. Exactly. It's a great thing where he's like, oh, this is homemade? What apples did you use? She's like, oh, we didn't get as many trick-or-treaters this year. And yeah, they pop through his neck. And it's Steve Johnson did the makeup for this movie across the board.
Splat Johnson.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I mean, there's some great effects. I mean, that one included.
It is sort of the showcase of the movie. Is one of the things that I noticed watching Witchboard and then Night of the Demons in such close proximity to one another is that they kind of almost have the same exact plot setup. Is that, like, you know, Witchboard starts, you're at a party. It's a bunch of dudes. And it's kind of the thing that you pointed out, too, is that, like, Kevin Tenney's sort of trying to make a real movie out of both of these to a certain degree, because it's just a bunch of people, like, sitting around at a party talking about, like, the existence of God and, like, philosophy and stuff. And, like, the dialogue's actually pretty good. And then they get into using a witch board at a party, which, like, look, guys, I'm not going to lie. I don't know what kind of parties you guys are going to, but, like, if somebody whips out a witch, like, a Ouija board, I'm leaving. I'm just going to be like, this is a bad idea. We're not doing this, you know? But then it sets up, you know, the rest of the movie as they conjure a spirit, David, right?
Yes.
And, you know, they're speaking with it. The spirit gets angry. And then there's a whole bunch of crazy demonic possession and accidents, quote unquote. It almost becomes like Kevin Tenney's Final Destination.
Yes.
At certain points where this, you know, spirit that they've conjured is, like, creating these accidents. Like, the sheetrock falls on the one friend, and probably the best kill in the whole movie.
Pancakes him.
Like, totally splats him. And then there's a couple other just kind of death by design, you know, set pieces that are set up that, like the one with, what's her name from Roadhouse, who plays the psychic medium.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When it throws her out of the window and impales her, like, that's also
pretty
fucking
awesome.
She lands
on a sundial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it looks incredible. But, like, it really sets up, like, these awesome Final Destination-style set pieces. And you can kind of see, though, that he's doing a dry run for Night of the Demons. Because, like, it ends with Tawny Katan being possessed by the spirit of, like, a serial killer who they also brought back when they were playing with the witch board. And a huge showdown at the end, which, I mean, is really, he takes that idea and just does that for Night of the Demons. He kind of skips all the other shit to where Night of the Demons becomes about a bunch of kids who sneak out, throw a party at, like, an old haunted house where there was almost like a Lutz-style, like, murder-suicide, like Amityville that happened in the house.
But he was also the owner. It's a mortuary. Like, yeah. It was a funeral home, sorry. And the owner had been, like, having sex with the cadavers. Like, it was kind of a house of horrors. He did kill his family.
Kills himself.
And it's also, they even go further back. It's almost like The Shining, where it's on kind of cursed ground beyond that. And they're saying that, you know, this guy tells all the stories, these wonderful exposition scenes. This nerdy guy's like, yeah, well, it was cursed ground. Like, even Native Americans around here wouldn't camp there. But they have this whole thing too of, like, it's on one side of the stream, the underground stream, and if you stay on one side, it kind of keeps the demons from crossing.
There's almost too much information.
Oh, it just dumps.
Yeah, because it tries to set up all this, like, mythology around the house, and it's just kind of like, all you had to say is, like, bad stuff happened, guy killed his family, killed himself, might have been possessed by demons, and then we're off to the races. Because, like, they basically raise the demons by accident, more or less, and they come and start possessing the hot girls in the group one by one, and that's it. That's the movie. And then it almost becomes like Kevin Tenney's Evil Dead.
Right.
Because the possessed, you know, especially the girls, are very close to deadites. Like the way they act, how goofy they become, they dance and do crazy shit.
They become human again.
Yeah.
Like they'll flash back to look normal.
Yeah. And it's like, but Linnea Quigley is like, gives like an all timer horror. I don't know if we call her a scream queen, like, because she goes beyond to which, like, she's almost more like horror skank in this, because like she's so nasty and sexual, and like she looks like a walking STD in this movie, but like she's also captivating to watch the entire time because she has that very strange, for such a tiny girl, because she was only what, like 4'11" or something.
Yeah.
Couldn't have weighed more than 95 pounds and you know, soaking in coke sweat, we'll say.
Jesus.
But like, she, you know, she has this very deep voice almost, where she's like, hey, we're gonna hang out here, like almost very Valley Girl.
It's almost like a flat, like Aubrey Plaza, like bitchy girl thing going on.
It's not, which she really plays into in Return of the Living Dead.
Yes, it's trash.
Which is one of my, I think, favorite in terms of picks for like ultimate Halloween movies. Like, I think that movie has the same, it's kind of like what we talked about with RoboCop and Darkman, is those movies feel like they take place like right down the block from one another. Night of the Demons and Return of the Living Dead feel like they exist kind of in the same weird punk rock universe. Like, even the crazy pig dude who's like super obnoxious. Oh,
Stooge.
In it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stooge like drives that car that looks like the, you know, Return of the Living Dead kids would have driven too, that's covered in like graffiti and everything. But like Linnea Quigley, she gives like one of the all time like super skank performances, with like how naked she gets, how committed to being kind of like nasty and mean and like sexual the entire time. It's really quite something, because like I started rewatching this because I've seen this a bunch of times. I don't love it as much as you do, and we'll get into my issues with it in a second here, but like I started watching it, and then I had to go to work, and I paused it, and I put it on one of the TVs at the bar when I was setting everything up, and then people started to come in and were watching it, and they got actually offended by the Linnea Quigley scene, particularly where she's like drawing on her kind of naked flesh with the lipstick, and then pushes one of her fingers through like one of her nipples and stuff. As they were looking it up, they're like, what the fuck is this? I didn't know this was Casino El Camino. And it's like,
that's what I was gonna think. Yeah.
Sir, calm down. Like, it's Halloween. We're watching fucking horror movies. I'm not running a fucking daycare here. Like, come on now. But like, I was watching it too, and I was like, this gets like nastier than I remember.
Yeah, it's That's why I really like the movie, I think, is that, and why for me it ages well. And I've now been watching it for, you know, 20 years.
Like,
and
Witchboard doesn't get this.
No.
This, well, perverted, we'll say.
At all. And like, Witchboard, like, you know, I really, really like what he's trying to do. And I like that there's actually like an arc for the two main male characters. Like,
yeah, it's like, what if your frenemies like team up and basically go on like a ghost hunt?
No, it's cool. And like, I like both the actors playing. I think they both do like a really great job. You have
They're having fun.
No, yeah. And but Night of the Demons, though, is like a lot of my favorite 80s horror, kind of like Fright Night, is just a house of horrors.
Yeah.
Right, it is this. It's just like a lineup of amazing special effects, and it's also just a vibe. You know, like the movie feels like you're spending Halloween night with, like, you're getting to live Halloween night with these like teens in 1988, which you and I never got to do. You know, we were what, 5, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, and like we talked about with a lot of, it's a slasher setup too. I mean, however they die, it's a slasher setup of like.
Well, it reminds, you know, me a lot of like One Dark Night.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
Or Hell Night with Linda Blair.
Yeah.
Where it's like, through some circumstance, these kids are trapped in like this crazy spooky location. Which, let's face it, like, that mortuary house that this movie takes place in, like the location or I don't know if it's a location or sets or a mix of both.
I think it's a mix.
Because like this movie kind of like it's not as low budget as Witchboard, but it's still not made for a lot of money. Like I like that some of the early scenes, like when we leave our main like good girl's house, there's that scene on the porch where they're standing outside and they basically like stapled up like a Frankenstein like cutout that you would get from like Halloween Adventure, and that's your way of knowing like, oh, it's Halloween season. It's like there's one decoration
there. Yeah, and it's by the producer's friend's house.
Yeah, and it's a single two shot in front of this like apartment, you know.
Yeah.
And like but the mortuary location that half of this movie's set in, kind of like the same thing with Hell Night and Return of the Living Dead too. Like it does a ton of the heavy lifting for it, to where it's like it's just all about hanging out in this spooky ass house.
Yeah, and again, we're talking spooky season movies, and so it is the vibe of like, what would you want to do with your friends on a Halloween night? And I think there's a larger conversation of what makes a movie a good horror movie versus a spooky season movie. And as you kind of said earlier, it is the fall vibes. It is, I mean, usually taking place on or around Halloween. It's not just a horror movie. It's the feeling of the spookiness of being a kid. And for me, spooky season usually is, I end up watching a lot of stuff that I grew up watching. So I'm watching like Ernest Scared Stupid, like less horrific stuff and more fun. Or even like, you know, Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. It's nostalgia for me.
Well, I'm going to give you a great example, or at least in my mind, it's a great example. You might think I'm a fucking moron, but like, it's, if you look at the Halloween series, it's like Halloween, you would think the original is the ultimate like spooky season, like entry from that. But really when you get to Halloween 3.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's like with the Halloween masks and the pieces of Stonehenge and like that very autumnal kind of vibe as they're chasing after, even though it's like a coastal California town that they end up in, it still has that very spooky fall feeling vibe to it that like, to me, Halloween 3 is the ultimate like spooky season movie, where like it might not be the best Halloween movie overall. Does that make sense?
Oh no, 100%. And that's why I like 4 and 5 too. For the reason is, we talked about this when we did the Halloween episode, was they really, the opening credits of part 4 are all the fall stuff. It's and then 5, they go to a fucking farm. Like, 5's not the best movie, but you get more fall vibes in 5 and 4 compared to part 1, which is so California, and it's mostly just in a house. Like, I love, it's my favorite movie of all time, but it doesn't feel fall to me.
No, it does not. And the other thing is that it's like Halloween 4, there's a reason why when, you know, AMC does their Fear Fest like every October, and it's constant, like it's just horror movies on constant rotation.
Right.
Like Halloween 4, like I've had Fear Fest on in the bar like nonstop on one of the TVs all month.
Yeah.
And Halloween 4 is probably played 16 times now in that bar over the course of the month. And we were talking about it. We were making a joke about it, being like, damn, Halloween 4 is on again. And it wasn't until like you just said what you said that I kind of realized it, is that it's like, of course Halloween 4 is the one you program over and over and over, because it's the one that feels the most like Halloween outside of 3.
Yep. Yeah. And like you said, with 3, you get the trappings of Halloween. Like, you get the pumpkins, you get like the whole, the vibes, you get the toy, you get the trick or treat. It really is leaning into the holiday versus Halloween.
Well, and also like the theme song and like Get Ready for the Horror Marathon on TV. Like, it's really setting it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, what other movies would you count as like the great like spooky season? We were having a text thread going back and forth trying to make a whole list for this episode, and we came up with a pretty diverse collection of stuff.
Well, I think, again, we mentioned Fright Night. You had said that was on your list.
And that's a big one.
And I, even though Fright Night doesn't really take place heavily in the fall, and I think it's also like California, clearly, and it's, you know, a backlot, there's something about the link between the suburbs and Halloween for me.
Yeah.
Of like growing up in a more of a suburban town, you know, and we were big on Halloween. Everyone decorated like it was full on trick or treat, like walking around. It was big. Parties, everything, really, you know. It also was Indiana, so very autumnal, like the corn and everything. And I feel like that captures that feel of like being, you know, your neighbor. It's the adventure of like, what if your neighbor was a vampire? It, again, it's
on the horror host, like with Roddy McDowell. Yeah,
there's something about connecting it to that feel again, that like kiddie, or even like the kind of like universal horror side of things where it's vampires and goblins and it's more kind of classic.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, yeah. It totally makes sense. But I also think that the difference between a spooky season movie and a straight up good like Halloween horror movie is that I think a spooky season movie has to be fun to a certain degree.
Yeah.
It's like to bring it back to the AMC like Fear Fest that's been on all the time. Like there was a day where they were playing and it didn't make any sense programming wise because they were playing all the Halloween movies, but they were playing them like fucking out of order.
Yeah.
Like they were playing Halloween 5 and then Halloween 4 came on and then they jumped to Rob Zombie's Halloween. And that was the thing is I realized that Rob Zombie's Halloween, for as much as I like that movie, it's not a good like spooky season movie. Actually, I shouldn't say I like Rob Zombie's Halloween. I like Halloween 2 a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
The first Halloween fucking sucks, but it's not a great spooky season movie because it's so ugly.
Yeah.
And it's mean.
It's mean, yeah.
It's nasty. It's not fun to sit through. I mean, I would say the same thing. I think Halloween 2 is a little better as a spooky season movie because it has like the costume party towards the end.
The little kid. Sorry, I'm thinking you're talking about the remake. Yeah, no, and I think they lean more into the night of Halloween.
The night of Halloween, yeah. You know, like the kid coming up to the hulking Michael Myers. Are you a giant? Like all that stuff. Like I think zombies tapping in a little more into the Halloween season kind of energy with that movie. But even that one, I just watched that like a week or so ago. And that movie's so mean and violent and gross that like I have trouble just throwing that on. And we did throw it on in the mix, but like we got halfway through and I was like, damn, this movie is... It is gnarly. Like, I love Halloween 2 as well documented on this podcast over the years, but like, it's not a great spooky season movie. Where I would argue the one Rob Zombie movie that does work as a spooky season movie is House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yes.
Because that has the very funhouse sort of vibe to it that you're riding along, especially with like the Halloween ride that they do go on in the beginning and everything. Like, that's a really gross, crazy, but it has like the feeling of like walking through a haunted house. Like I really like that movie.
Yeah, again, House of Horrors, right? You have the sense of like the episodic nature of now there's this monster, now there's this scene.
Even when it turns into his like Texas Chainsaw basically by the end.
Well, that's what I was gonna say is I think Texas Chainsaw 2 is a great spooky season, but not part one. Like, if I had to choose one between them.
Yeah, out of that whole season, Texas Chainsaw 2, because we had that on in the bar again the other day, and we were watching it, me and one of the guys I work with, Andrew, and we were staring at it. And one of the things that we were amazed with that film is, like, the production design once you get into
the
cavern sets at the end.
I love that shit so much.
That feels like Rob Zombie's always kind of been chasing...
Yeah.
Making like a Texas Chainsaw movie, and like House of a Thousand Corpses feels more spiritually linked to like the second half of Texas Chainsaw 2 than anything else, because it's so bright and garish and goofy looking, and like again it looks like you're trapped kind of in this like Carnival of Horrors kind of set.
I mean, strangely, another movie that we were talking about, Tobe Hooper, I mean, like, I think Funhouse is a good spooky season movie.
I think it would be a better spooky season movie if it wasn't fucking boring as shit.
Well, that's what's crazy, because like Val and I watched it early, like last year when we first started dating.
It feels 9 years long.
But that's, well, like no one dies for like a long time.
It's so long.
Yeah, and it's just like, and there's not enough characters, there's just like, and the deaths aren't great. But it is a vibe, I think carnivals have, to your carnival point, have the sense of fall, of like a fall Halloween carnival. There's a sense of like... The candy apples and things like that, and the kind of Americana thing that goes along with it too. And I think it's, you know, we were talking about this with Witchboard, and that like out of, you know, the two of us and our friend Shapiro, like I probably like the, like, and I like fucked up shit, but I like to watch kind of low key horror in a way. Like I like a thing like Witchboard where it's like, I don't, you know, it's not very scary. I think it's got some, but it's got cool vibes to it. Kind of like how I like The Boogans. Like, The Boogans is not a good horror movie, but I like kind of living in that world.
You like what Sam Raimi would commonly refer to as spookablast movies.
Yeah.
You like things that are horrific, but they're a little fun. They're a little goofy. They have good gore. They have good scares, but they're not like Martyrs. You're not walking out of them.
Which I do love, but for different reasons.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's like you're not walking out of that movie. And also, I think that's why, you know, it's a great festival movie with the 24-hour fest with Witchboard, is that it's poppy, it's fun, it's 85 minutes, it delivers what you want, some good kills, it's not too weighty, and it has like a good kind of weird little like shock ending that it you know goes out on. It's like perfect for that party vibe. It's like, you know, we started the marathon with Mario Bava's Black Sabbath, which was fun, but it's like a weird like kickoff thing. You almost think like something like Witchboard or whatever should have been like a lead off movie, because you want more of like a bang to start with. Where like, you know, Bava's Black Sabbath is like an anthology movie. It has the three stories.
A varying quality.
You have the good goofy like Boris Karloff like intros and stuff, so it kind of sets up like a fun little party vibe. But the pacing is just so kind of wonky or whatever. It just doesn't fully work. Where a great spooky season movie was the second movie, which I'd never seen before, is Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. I love it so much. Somehow this movie had slipped past me my entire life. We finally got to it, and like with a crowd, that movie was just absolutely tremendous, because Cassandra Peterson, like, she's like such a great performer. I love Elvira. Like, you compared it to Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah, written by one of Pee-wee's collaborators, and they were collaborators back in the Groundlings.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah. And it really has that same kind of poppy, fun, quippy vibe. And then it becomes almost like a Rodney Dangerfield style, like snobs versus slobs, like kind of comedy, you know, like a Caddyshack or like a Back to School or something, where it's just about, you know, here's this horror host who comes in, who's super hot, super quippy, uses her sexuality to her advantage, and then she inspires all the kids in the town to want to, you know, be on her side, where like the morality, what was it called? The morality club? Morality police are basically
led by Chastity Pariah.
Yeah, who's incredible. Yeah. And also great unused, it's probably used somewhere, but drag queen name out there. Like, if there's a drag queen who hasn't used Chastity Pariah yet, there you go. There's my $1 billion idea for you.
Guaranteed it's been done.
But it's just incredibly fun and goofy, and like, also in hindsight, like, you know, Cassandra comes out later as like a gay woman, and you watch this movie through that prism, you know, in that like it becomes almost like a great piece of like queer, like horror comedy, like filmmaking, because like they paint her house, they go from like painting it this like gothic mansion that she inherits, they paint it basically like the same colors as like the pride flag.
Yeah.
And it all becomes about like it, like embracing who you are and like your true identity. And like, that's why she becomes such an inspiration to the kids around her, and going against like the moral grain and everything. It's just, it's such a fun, weird little movie. And then the next movie too, I think was a great spooky season movie, is Stephen King's Sleepwalkers.
Yeah.
Because you want to talk about a strange like vibe, like that movie feels like it was written on drugs.
Well, it probably was. It
probably that is a super goofy, weird little movie with some great cat acting in it.
Yeah, I mean, you're a kitty boy, and like there's a Clovis, who's the hero cat, is so delightful, and the movie is like also. So it's obviously, it's written by Stephen King, is Stephen King vibes.
Yeah.
I mean, like the hot rod, the small town, the like very innocent first love kind of feel they're going for.
Imagine Amick as like the ultimate like Stephen King girl who works in a movie theater.
Yeah, and you have, you know, Alice Krieg, who's, like, so sexy as the mom.
Uncomfortably hot.
Yeah, it's like, whoa.
Especially once you get into the incest stuff in, like, the first scene.
No, like, literally, I forget every time I watch this movie is, like...
Very horny horror.
He comes home, and they're just dancing, and you're like, oh, there's some stuff between this mom, and then he just literally carries upstairs and has sex with her.
Yeah.
You're like, well, I guess we're not, you know, subtext is for cowards.
Yeah, really. Well, all the cats watch from the yard.
Oh, my God. It's such a bizarre movie, but, no, I mean, dude, Elvira, again, I think does match into the Spookablast, even has a subplot of, like, you know, a fun thing of her uncle... Her great uncle is a sorcerer.
Wants the cookbook, quote unquote, which is really just a book of spells.
Book of spells. And it's just.
It becomes Monster Squad.
It's Monster Squad. It's also like very much. She always lived in that kind of the Munsters world of like the fun jokes, but sexier.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. She's like almost if you want to fuck, what's her name from the Munsters?
Oh, the wife. Lillian?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like. It's just a super fun movie. And I mean, but they're linked to, like, plot wise, the Monster Squad, which was another movie that we mentioned as one of the ultimate, like, spooky season films, because it also looks like it's filmed in the same town square everything.
Yeah.
As Monster
Squad. Same back lot, yeah.
But Monster Squad, 80 Minutes, co written by Shane Black and Fred Decker, you know. Has basically like knockoffs of the Universal monsters come in, fight against a group of kids. There's an amulet. There's like the end of the world coming. But it's like one of the ultimate like Halloween movies because it gives you all of the classic monsters right here and repackages them in like a very digestible trick-or-treat kind of vibe fashion.
Yeah. Well, there is something about the, you know, the Universal monster mashup movies, like the ones in the like later 40s, where it's like House of Frankenstein and like House of Dracula, where you get more bang for your buck, and the plots were a little bit looser. You know, how do we get? It's almost like a Avengers style team up. How do we make everyone in the same space? You know, or one of my favorites, which is Frankenstein versus the Wolfman.
Yeah,
from that era, and I think we don't have to talk too heavily about Universal, but those are great for spooky season. I mean, the kind of gothic. Even if they don't take place in the States on Halloween, there is that feeling of, again, the stuff he'd watch as a kid.
Yeah.
You know? And
they're all pretty short.
Yeah, they're short. They're like an hour 10 or whatever. But I'm thinking, like, you know, or even, like, the 50s monster movies like Tarantula. You know, just, like, the kind of stuff you'd watch at, like, an all-night movie marathon in the 50s. It just gets into your, like...
Or, like, you know, that they do watch with, like, I Was a Teenage Werewolf and, like, It. You know?
Yeah.
You know, they're watching in these classic old theaters and everything, and, like, you almost wonder why the Exhumed guys don't play more stuff like that, especially since we're watching it in the Colonial.
Yeah.
Like, but, I mean, all of these movies, you watch Sleepy Hollow, which was another really great one.
Yeah, last night.
Beetlejuice, like, a few of the Tim Burton ones.
I mean, really Nightmare Before Christmas, obviously.
Nightmare Before Christmas, you know, fits in as, like, a great spooky season movie. But, like, again, these were all fun, poppy, goofy, and, like, really deliver on, like, those party vibes that you want.
Well, it was funny. Val, she likes Sleepy Hollow a lot, too. And I was like, can we put it on?
I haven't watched it in so long. I might watch that tonight.
Well, it's... It's one of those movies we talked before. When I'm watching it, it's my favorite Tim Burton movie. It's like the most Tim Burton movie. Because like the budget is obviously insane. Has the best kills. Kevin Yeager did all the makeup effects. Great decapitations. Great fun horror mythology they built of this kind of like this witch controlling him. It all makes sense. It's fun. It's action packed. There's like a fucking chase on a wagon near the end of the movie or on a carriage.
Great Christopher Walken.
Emmanuel Lubezki shot this movie.
Yeah.
Like, in Valor, I was just like, I stood up and I'm like, man, this is so fucking good. She's like, it's just vibes.
Yeah.
I mean, that movie is maybe the most vibey, like, for this. Also, it's the Northeast. You know, there's pumpkins. It's smoky. You're in the woods. I mean, it just has, I want to live inside that movie.
Yeah, and it's one of the last times that Johnny Depp is really, really great on screen, too, where he's collaborating with
What's the last Tim good Burton. Tim Burton movie, in my opinion?
I don't know if I would go that far, because Big Fish is after, right?
Yeah, but I don't like it. This, I feel like, is the end of, like, that
and I
style.
I have a an unpopular opinion is that I like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I know, yeah. You're not a fan.
You're my best buddy, man. I love you. I can't meet you on that one.
You couldn't. I'm not gonna sit here and like ride. I'm not ride or die. I'm not a huge, Tim Burton fan to begin with.
Right.
But like, I actually don't mind that movie too much.
Well, and again, like his early stuff. If you're talking about spooky vibes, like he's the king of that. Like almost childlike wonder, horror, gothic, mythic. I mean, Edward Scissorhands is not a horror movie, but completely fits into that kind of
fairy tale
world, you know?
Yeah. So do you want to do questions?
Yeah.
All right. Questions about 1988's Night of the Demons and various spooky season staples. Martin, we'll just start easy. Top three spooky season titles.
So number one would honestly probably be Sleepy Hollow.
Right.
I would just say the most. One we didn't mention was, there's a lot of great TV horror, Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. Is a really good. It's the vibe. I mean,
it's Larry Drake.
Charles Durning is like this creepy pedo.
Oh yeah, gross.
He's great.
Speaking of creepy pedos, Martin Sheen and Little Girl Lives Down the Lane that we saw.
Another.
I'm talking about. There was a lot of weird sex at this year's marathon. It was very horny.
Yeah.
You know,
uncomfortably
like,
horny,
uncomfortably
though.
Uncomfortably horny.
Not sexy, just horny.
Sleepwalkers, it's the only time incests look good to me.
That's true.
Not only time.
And then number three, I do Night of the Demons. So those are like my top three. But honestly, if we're talking about like more like throwback stuff, I'd also put in like Ernest Scared Stupid in terms of like what I watch every year. Like, I love that movie. I watch it every Halloween.
Sure, man.
Yeah.
You know what? Live your life, brother.
Yeah.
I'm not here to judge.
I will.
Well, maybe I am here to judge.
Yes. Well.
And I will. I would, if I'm doing top three, Halloween 3 is probably number one for me. It's the one I watch every year. I think it's the ultimate Halloween movie. The masks, the little kids, the horror-thon. I just, it's terrific. You know, it's also one of those movies that's been reclaimed. Like, we talk about this a lot, and that, originally it was, cast aside.
The bastard child.
It was the bastard child, but, like, we did, also horror fans have kind of rewritten history over the years because it still made money. Like, it wasn't like it was a huge failure. It was the original, like, Last Jedi, where, like, the fan backlash was so horrid. That the producers were like, ugh, I guess we got to go back to the thing that we know that works, which is the guy in the white mask.
Well, they didn't understand IP yet, I feel like. There was like, they're like, oh, why? It's Halloween.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, we want Michael Myers. Like,
yeah, that's what we sign up for. Yeah. Like, we don't.
Like, he's the hero here. Yeah, he's the draw.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of like what we talked about with most slasher movies is that it's like people sign up for the villain.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they're here for. That and the kills.
Yeah.
You know, number two is In the Mouth of Madness.
Ooh.
A movie we have not talked about yet, and you actually bought the 4K
sitting right next to me right now
from Arrow at this year's Horrorthon. I think this is kind of an idiosyncratic spooky season movie, but it just captures the same vibes we're talking about. It's a little darker. It's a little more fucked up. I think the movie's still legitimately scary every time I watch it. It has one of my favorite endings of all time.
It's cosmically scary.
Cosmically scary. Yeah. Very Lovecraftian. It's like one of the clues this year at the Horrorthon was like Lovecraftian horror movie that's not actually Lovecraft. And it was Messiah of Evil, which I think is a great clue. And also, I'd never seen that movie before. So on 35mm, that was pretty great. And it has a lot of the same vibes as In the Mouth of Madness of, like, traveling to this kind of lost town that's deserted, something's going on with the townsfolk. They slowly start to mutate and attack our protagonist. But I truly think In the Mouth of Madness is like Carpenter's last masterpiece.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the ones that's like fully indisputable that like every time I watch it once a year. I watch it on October 1st this year to kick off spooky season. And it just...
It's one of your favorite movies, I know, too.
Yeah, it just delivers out. Like a bullet for me every time. I love it so much. I get so much out of it. And I think it captures what we're talking about is that it just... It's like fall in a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, like you take a sip and you're like, ah, yes, this is what this season is supposed to feel like. Number three for me... This one's a little tougher. Because I feel like there's a bunch of stuff kind of vying for that third spot. I would go with George Romero's Creepshow, actually. Like, you know, they kicked off the horror marathon, as we kind of noted, with an anthology this year with Black Sabbath. They'd already played Creepshow before. And, like, it's just, again, it captures the EC Comics kind of vibe so well. It's one of the best Stephen King movies, one of the best George Romero movies, one of the best Tom Savini movies, frankly. Like, all of the monsters and goopiness, and, like, it might be the best anthology movie of all time. I'm trying to think about it. Like, I was listening to a podcast recently with Alex Ross Perry where they were talking about the VHS films and how, and I know you and I are not huge fans of them, but the one thing I do think they point out that is true about them is they're reliable, and that it does have a fan base of folks who like look forward to it every year, and that it's consistent, and that they've delivered a VHS movie every year for what? 7 years, 8 years at this point, almost.
Oh shit!
Been almost a decade, the better part of a decade. Well,
no,
we'll say
more, because I was living when the first one, a bunch of people from Atlanta made it. I went to the like this premiere they did because Bruckner used to live there. I think it was like 2013.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
Like they've been, but they've been like cranking these movies out in the same way that like the Friday the 13th you could count on them. Paranormal Activity once a year, and like. They were talking about, and they did raise a great point, is that they were like, what happened to the horror anthology? There was a period of time there after VHS where we started getting more and more.
Southbound.
Ryan Spindel's Mortuary Collection.
Yeah, which is great.
Was a big one. So it started to be a thing again after VHS. But VHS has been the only one that's really established a kind of like consistent franchise that gives you one every year. And like the anthology movie for me is like a true staple of spooky season. Like you have to watch one a year. Like this year we watched Tales from the Hood, which I hadn't watched in a long time, which is one I think might be my number two behind Creepshow.
I like Tales from the Dark Side a whole lot.
Oh, that's another
because the
great
whole
one too.
The mummy sequence with Buscemi is my favorite.
Lot 246,
which is the Conan Doyle story. Yeah. Is so fucking cool.
Well, it's the Cat from Hell one too, which is really terrific.
Cat's Eye is great.
Cat's Eye is great.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, from Tales from the Dark Side, the James Remar Lover's Vow.
Oh, God. With the gargoyle.
Yeah, that's the short story that fucked me up as a kid because I thought that gargoyle was fucking terrifying.
Yeah, it's really good. I think you're right. I think anthologies, though, are great for this type of this time of year because they are like a sampler platter. Too, where you have that sense of, especially if you're having a party and people over and you're not wanting to commit, you know, oh, let's put this thing on. It's like four stories and it's like, I don't know, it works well with the crowd usually.
Well, it's also sort of like if you grew up reading the way that we read too, like, you know, Skeleton Crew and Night Shift and
Nightmares and Dreamscapes.
Well, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, like all of these.
Yeah.
Short story collections that we read as kids too. Like I used to keep those literally on the back of the toilet and would like read parts of these scary stories and stuff while I was doing my business and
doing the poops,
taking the kids to the pool.
Yeah.
But I would read one of these short stories because it was just a part of like how I learned how storytelling worked and stuff. And I really think that the anthology movies should be brought back. You know, it's crazy that they just don't work. You would think they'd work better.
Well, you know, I was talking to, I met up with Ryan Spindell when I was in LA, and he made a great point. He goes, he feels like Zach Cregger has cracked how to do an anthology film as as one narrative. Like, he does it with Barbarian and he does it with Weapons, where you have, you get your cake and eat it too.
I don't know if I agree with that, because
especially Barbarian. I think Barbarian more than Weapons.
So here's my comeback to that. One man's anthology is another person's Altman. You know,
right? Where I think his shortcuts. Yeah,
he's more making movies that are ensemble pieces that are fractured. They use a little bit of Rashomon kind of POV changing and stuff. I don't know if I fully get on board with calling those movies anthologies, or even like rejiggering the anthology to a narrative, because you could like Shortcuts. I mean, Shortcuts, I guess, is kind of an anthology movie, but like. And is Magnolia an anthology movie? Because that's also the movie that Cregger references when he talks about Weapons.
No, I see where you're coming from. I'm kind of in between you both. Yeah. Like, where I think it's an interesting point to make, where you can, in terms of like, what I like about a good horror short story, reading it or watching it, like in a short, or, you know, we've both made a few, you know, and like having the sense of a punchline. Like, they all have that really great punchline, and you think about...
The really good ones do.
It's usually some kind of twist. It's usually... Or you think about Twilight Zone, which are great short... Tales from the Crypt. Obviously, Night Gallery, one of my favorite shows of all time, which I think surpasses some parts of Twilight Zone, is that sense of, like, you know, ironic... This ironic twist, you know, the person...
It's a morality play.
Be careful what you wish for is usually kind of a... You know,
a big part of
a lot of the narratives, but no, I think in general, you know, they're a good thing to watch this time of year as anthology. And again, more of like your pick, you can watch a bunch of different like fun little stories.
Yeah,
you know, I think one of the things we were hoping for, not to get too sidetracked, that our buddy Simon we were with was like, oh man, I hope it's Trilogy of Terror, Dan Curtis, because we're all Dan Curtis fans, and that would have been all his stuff is great. His Trilogy of Terror, his Dead of Night. Yeah.
How do you feel about, to bring it back to Romero again, have you seen Two Evil Eyes?
I love it.
Really?
Well, and dude, what's the, why am I blanking? The Carpenter one.
Oh, Body Bags.
I think Body Bags is a great, fun.
It's okay.
Yeah. Oh, I think Carpenter's segment at the gas station fucking rules.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. But I mean, that was rejiggered though. Because that was originally supposed to be a Showtime series.
Oh, right, right.
That they basically cut back together. Like, on the same podcast episode, Alex Ross Perry brings up Night Train to Terror.
Yeah.
So where it's the train movie where God and the Devil are playing chess, and you get, like, three different stories, too. But, like, they originally were, like, aborted features, more or less. They got, you know, recut into, like, this anthology movie. Spookies does a very similar thing, where it was like a bunch of like footage from maybe some other projects.
Well, it's two directors made movies and they kind of splice them into one.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, but Body Bags does a similar thing, where originally Body Bags was supposed to be an anthology series like Tales from the Crypt for Showtime that Carpenter was like executive producing. Yeah. And he was more or less, because he does play kind of like the Crypt Keeper as like this mortician who introduces every story. But like, they aborted it and then they just took what they had, because it's like him and Toby Hooper's the one who does the other one.
I think. Well, it's kind of what happened with King of the Road, that Tales from the Crypt episode that I love with Brad Pitt.
Right.
That was originally a new series they were doing. It was more of like a Two-Fisted Tales, like the more like the thriller action side of
EC. Or like True Detective.
Well, EC Comics. Yeah. And then they were like, well, it's not going to happen. So they just spliced it into.
Yeah, they just use it that way.
Yeah.
Because I think it's all the same producers were supposed to be that new,
that
new series as well. Anyway, Body Bags I like, but I don't love in the same way that you do. But double feature.
I'm going to do... With any of them?
Yeah.
Sleepy Hollow, and I did it last night, and I did Brotherhood of the Wolf, which, you know, similar, not too far off time period, different country, similar smoky, small. It's also the same plot. Mm-hmm. These two guys are sent to solve mystery of a monster of some sort. One is a headless horseman with more mystical. One is, turns out to not be mystical. But we were talking offline. I would not recommend the director's cut. It's 2.5 hours long.
Jesus.
But this movie, I compare it to The Matrix in that it was like when the Wachowski, when they would talk about making The Matrix, it's like, it's just all the stuff we like. They're like, what if kung fu, anime?
Well, it's also the post-Pulp Fiction. Everybody's allowed to kind of do like a genre mashup thing now. Like that was just what was in vogue in like that time during like the mid-90s through like the early 2000s.
Yeah, this is 01, and it's beautiful. It also is a huge movie. Like you watch it like...
Oh, yeah.
It's epic. Like I'm like, this must have spent a lot of money on this movie.
And Monica Bellucci.
Monica Bellucci. Samuel L. Behan. Vincent Cassell is a good bad guy. Some questionable CGI with the monster puppetry was done by Jim Henson's team, his company. It's weird because it's like you have Mark Dacascos as a Cherokee who knows martial arts for some reason, knows kung fu. It's so fucking stupid, but I hadn't watched it in years, and I had a really good time like watching it last night. And I think it lines up very well with like...
It's a very silly movie.
Yeah. But also it kind of has fall looks, vibes, too.
You know? It looks pretty terrific. Like, very sexy, very violent.
Yeah. It's kind of badass. Like, when Fransok at the end gets revenge on Monty, he's just, like, going Rambo on everybody with these, like, giant knives. I'm like, yep, I'm in.
So I was thinking a lot about vampires because this year at the Horrorthon, there were a ton of vampire movies. You had the vampire segment inside of Black Sabbath. Sleepwalkers is more or less a vampire movie just with like weird cat people who are like almost like life forcing folks, like just draining their essence. That's the one thing about Sleepwalkers that's kind of crazy when we were watching is that like for all of its goofiness, like it doesn't explain anything.
Nope.
It's just like, here are these cat people. I guess they need a virgin, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, it's not really like even explained on how they pick their victims, really. They can get killed by cats, I guess. And, like, I go.
I
like,
think there's an Egyptian thing that I read something about it one time that maybe mentioned, like, it's the whole connection with, like, cats being connected to, like, the land of the dead with Egyptians. And then how they're cat people. But it's like...
Well, it's clear that Stephen King's a cat dude.
Yeah.
Between Pet Sematary and Cat's Eye and everything. Like,
and he's a dog dude, too. So,
yeah. For a guy who's that scary, he's kind of cuddly, too. Yeah.
He's got a corgi named Molly, the Thing of Evil, which is his dog right now.
But so. They also played Innocent Blood from John Landis.
Blood and Roses.
Blood and Roses, the Roger Vadim movie.
Dracula.
Bram Stoker's Dracula, which was the revelation.
Oh, my God.
Like, Elvira was the movie that they played that I'd never seen. That was the real kind of discovery for me. But, like, the experience was just the next to last movie they played was Bram Stoker's Dracula, which somehow through all these years and tracking down all these 35mm prints and stuff, I'd still never seen the movie on the big screen, on 35, and it's just such a rapturous theatrical experience. Like, I love that movie to death. There's nothing like it.
They crank the sound.
Oh. It sounds incredible. The colors were amazing. The print was, like...
pristine.
Like, pretty much pristine. Like, it's just... There's no other movie like Bram Stoker's Dracula. Like, as flawed and weird as it is, like... it's still like a masterpiece to me because it just delivers a truly hypnotic and psychotic kind of cinematic experience.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a talk about a vibe, man.
Oh, my God, dude. And horny, too.
Oh, man. Well, that's another one of those movies that, like, I like Sleepy Hollow. I kind of want to just live in it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so sumptuous. The whole thing is just like you said, the colors, the costume design is Ishioka. It's just like, what the fuck, like, everything is to the top of its game. All the in-camera special effects, the miniature work, like, the set they built for, like, Dracula's castle, how it's him, looks like him sitting on a fucking throne. Yeah. Get the fuck out of here, man.
It's crazy.
I love, the whole opening is, like, my favorite cold open to any movie ever. It's just going from the war with his shadow puppets, with the red background, into him, his wife being dead, and he cursed his god. It's like, There's not a sense of cynicism in this movie. It's so straightforward. Like,
oh, and it's so romantic.
Oh, God. It's just fucking beautiful.
Like, he's really, really leaning into it the entire time, and it's, like, tough to deny, to be completely honest. I was going to go with Fright Night and George Romero's Martin.
Ooh.
As two kind of opposite ends. They both deliver a very autumnal, very kind of... Halloween feel, one being a big party movie, the other one kind of being this weird kind of art horror movie that Romero made.
Almost serial killer type movie in a way. Yeah.
But also just as hypnotic and great to watch and everything. And like also kind of captures the vibe of the 24-hour-thon is because 1 minute you can be watching Stephen King's Sleepwalkers, the next minute you could be watching Roger Vadim's Blood and Roses.
Right.
And it's just, it's the two sides to the Exhumed coin.
Right.
Because also, like, they played Joe Bagos' Bliss at, like, 4 in the morning or whatever. Like, it's they really had vampires on the mind this year, and that's why I wanted to do kind of a double feature to honor that idea.
Hell yeah.
So, remake of Night of the Demons.
I don't like the remake they did.
Yeah, with Edward Furlong.
And Shannon Elizabeth. It's not horrible, but it's just, like, it's really whatever.
It's flat. It's very DTV.
Well, and I think I don't think the idea of Night of the Demons is that fucking interesting. It's just execution. It's just like the fact that it's 1988, the fact you have Steve Johnson doing the special effects, the fact you have this like synthy, you know, score by his brother. And it just all kind of works together. It's also like really cheesy and like the acting is pretty shitty, especially from like Judy. Like there's some, but it just all works.
Well, and we've also gotten multiple of these. Is that like it's very much an Evil Dead kind of knockoff, right. But like Tales from the Crypt presents Demon Night is kind of Night of the Demons ish too.
Yeah,
like
which all we both
trapped
love.
In the halfway house and everything. So like, it's you've gotten one of these kind of at least one every decade. You know, and I feel like, you know, bringing back Evil Dead in like the 2000s too, like is a great kind of moment for Fede Alvarez. So I feel like maybe not remaking Night of the Demons exactly, but like the setup itself, I feel like we're due for another like a bunch of people trapped in a house get menaced by demons. There was also, what was that one? It was one of the Project Greenlight movies that they did.
Feast.
Yeah,
which is also the first a single one. Location. Second one. Yeah.
Or, you know,
yeah.
It's very gross and violent. But
Clue Gallagher's son directed it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like, you get one of these single location things like kind of once every decade. One is like, or every 10 years, we'll say there's one that kind of redefines or at least. Reinvigorates the subgenre, and I do think we're due for one now. It's just how do you basically like Bordello of Blood is also another one, not a good movie, mind you,
but I like it,
but goofy and fun and silly in its own right.
Well, they're all, I think we're worth also talking here about a special effects extravaganza, you know, where you have like this one location and all the money is put into great monster designs. You know, we didn't really get into it, but like we watched with Val my first time Trick or Treat, the 86.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And you know, it's funny because there's moments like you see that cool demon, then you never see it again.
It just shows up in the car and kills that one dude.
Yeah, and you're like, well, that's that. But the design and almost like Freddy Krueger setup. And
is that Splat Johnson too?
It might be.
Yeah.
No, it's Kevin Yeager.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's Kevin Yeager.
Yeah, Sleepy Hollow and Chucky and my favorite interview of all time, the coolest fucking guy, and married to the mom from Child's Play still.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's one, the coolest fucking guy. The Bill and Ted as well, the new Bill and Ted. And but no, there's something I really liked Trick or Treat. For the kind of that 80s vibe, but it missed out on more like kind of cool gore set pieces, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Face Melter, yay, nay.
It's tough.
I don't think so.
No, because I think when you get in, one of my problems with this movie, as much as I like it, is it's repetitive as fuck. Like, that's, once you get into the horror, it's just like, there's no buildup. It's just one thing after another.
That's my big issue with the film overall. Just sustains. Is that, like, I think it's actually better as almost like this weird, goofy teen punk comedy thing. But then when the actual demons show up, like as cool as they look and as gross and goofy and like uncomfortable as this with the sex stuff as like Linnea Quigley gets, it's just it's almost not as good as a horror movie as it is just a hangout movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
So like, yeah, it doesn't quite make Face Melter, but it's totally recommended if you need something for your, you know, last minute spooky season vibes.
Yeah. Or if you're looking for like an 80s horror you haven't watched, I always recommend this one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Martin, this has been great. We're moving on. We're going to do real movies. We're not going to do horror movies anymore, getting out of October. But you'll have to see. I don't think we have anything really lined up. Well, we do have one. I guess it does.
Yeah.
It's like the artier version of the movies we just talked about. Should we just say it's going to be Guillermo del Toro, because we're actually going to see Frankenstein here in an hour
after we're done recording.
And then we're going to watch the rest of his movies. So you have to stay tuned to see what we think about that guy next. Bye.
Bye.